Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Tara Gatewood. Every year in Santa Fe, New Mexico, a group of people reenact the retaking of the city by Spanish conquistadors some 300 years ago. Organizers insist the pageant is an accurate account of peaceful resettlement. Some Native groups, though, are becoming increasingly vocal in opposition, saying it's offensive and it romanticizes bloody and oppressive historical events. This year, 8 protesters were arrested. We're back after the news with more on this. Stay with us.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Some Northern Ute tribal members went before the Aspen City Council in Colorado Monday to urge them to vote to recognize the second Monday of October as Indigenous Peoples Day. The Aspen Times reports former Northern Ute Chairman Roland McCook asked the council to acknowledge Indigenous people, including the contributions of Utes, instead of a holiday honoring Christopher Columbus. Cities across the country are moving to replace the day with Indigenous Peoples Day. People have voiced concerns, saying the federal holiday represents genocide of Native Americans. The council's next meeting happens to fall on the second Monday of October, when council members are expected to vote on the proclamation. In Salt Lake City, the city council is also considering to recognize Indigenous Peoples Day. Salt Lake City Fox 13 reports the resolution may be discussed next week. Utah state lawmakers rejected a bill last year to rename Columbus Day to Indigenous Peoples Day. If passed, Salt Lake City would be the first city in Utah to replace and recognize the contributions of Native people instead of Columbus. Native Americans recently held a ceremony for 2 renovated totem poles for the city of Eugene, Oregon. KLCC's Brian Bull reports.
At the Amazon Pool, students from the 4J Natives program, tribal elders, and a drum group ushered in the first totem pole. Brenda Brainerd is head of the Natives program and is with the Confederated Tribes of the Coos, Lower Umpqua, and Siuslaw Indians.
These poles have all been blessed, if you will, by the local tribal people. We've always invited them to participate. We do have lots of kids who are from local tribes that have helped carve them, helped paint them, helped rehabilitate them.
The second pole was installed near the DeFazio Bridge. Whether swimmers or pedestrians, Brainerd hopes people have one major takeaway from seeing the totems.
They just can get that pause moment to say, oh, here we're Native people, and this is the evidence of what they were and what they still are, that we're not old-timey, that we're still here among them.
The city of Eugene asked local Natives to help renovate the 2 poles. A third was far too worn, so Brainerd says they'll soon start carving a new one that'll eventually go up at Sheldon High School. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
In Alaska, a Bethel man is working to incorporate his native language into technology. KYUK's Teresa Kotsarilis has more.
When we were young, we all recited the Yuyarak at the top of our lungs. It goes, Huankuta Yupigni.
Christopher Liu grew up speaking Yupik. He's now a grad student at Stanford studying electrical engineering, and he's trying to train a computer program to recognize Yupik speech.
Would you say you're building Yupik Siri?
I think that's the hope.
Liu hopes that his program will help bring Yupik into the internet age.
Having access to Yupik through technology is one way of allowing it to persist and making it easier to use.
To build a Yupik Siri, he needs 100 hours of recorded conversations to feed into the software. Transcribing the tape can get tedious, but Liu says his own Yupik is improving.
I get to learn more about traditional knowledge. I always think of Samyo. I still don't know yet what it means fully. That was the religion that existed here before Christianity. And I'm still trying to learn what that means. I should know what it means.
For KYUK, I'm Teresa Kotsarilis.
The U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs is holding an oversight hearing Wednesday on human trafficking. Senators will examine a federal report on human trafficking of Native Americans. Witnesses include advocates and federal officials. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios. by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by Northern Arizona University, a university committed to serving Native American students, offering opportunity in every direction, in Flagstaff, at community colleges around the state, and online. Learn more at nau.edu. And by the law offices of Sanofsky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Monkman, a national tribal rights law firm with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. More than 300 years ago, Don Diego de Vargas returned to Santa Fe. Every year, a group of reenactors present a version of the return, portraying it as a time of peaceful resettlement. The fiesta is also a celebration of Hispanic heritage. What opponents say is there's a perspective that's left out of the Fiesta de Santa Fe, a perspective of the Pueblo people who were in a state of ongoing war with de Vargas and other conquistadors at the time. Opponents also say it's time to stop romanticizing events that ignore the oppression by the occupying Spanish army and the violence they brought to the people who already lived there. Tension between the competing perspectives has been building, and police arrested several protesters at this year's Entrada reenactment. One of those people is Jennifer Marley, who is from San Ildefonso Pueblo, and she's an organizer with the Red Nation. She's facing two felony accounts of battery on a peace officer. She can't speak about her arrest, but she says her exposure to the reenactment goes way back.
I remember the Fiestas Council coming to school, like elementary school, when I was young. I didn't really know what was going on. They make it a mandatory assembly, so that's kind of disturbing. And I remember seeing the imagery and not really, you know, paying attention, not really being told, but they try to make it really fun, and they dance with the kids, but they don't really tell them what's going on. If it were historically accurate, it would be incredibly inappropriate for any audience. It would be absolutely bloody and horrific. So I don't think that should be reenacted anywhere, because it'd be horribly traumatic.
And that was Jennifer Marley, who was arrested while protesting the Entrada de Don Diego de Vargas reenactment in Santa Fe earlier this month. If there's something you'd like to say about this event and the issues it raises, join our conversation at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And is there a way to recognize the complexities of history that acknowledges various cultures? Have we reached a point where we know the historical figures are too flawed to celebrate as heroes? What do you think about that? Phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. And is the Entrada on par with erecting statues of Confederate Civil War leaders like Robert E. Lee and Jefferson Davis? Your thoughts are welcome today. 1-800-996-2848 is the number to get in on the conversation. And with us here in Studio 49 today is Elena Ortiz. She's an organizer for In the Spirit of Popey, and she is Oke Owinge Pueblo. It's our pleasure to welcome her here in Studio 49. Elena, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Also here in Studio 49 is Demetrius Johnson, and he is an organizer with the Red Nation and president of the Kiva Club at the University of New Mexico, and he is Diné. It's our pleasure to welcome him. I guess welcome him back to our studio, too. Demetrius, thank you for being with us.
All right, thank you for inviting me.
And folks, I know a lot of this circulated in the press, and a lot of times, you know, people want to hear more about this. I do want to share that we did invite Dean Mulligan, the 2017 president of the Santa Fe de Fiesta, to be a guest on the show today. He declined. We also reached out to David Maseret Jaramillo Entrada, who played Don Diego de Vargas this year. We also reached out to Hope Andrea Quintana, who was La Reina de la Fiesta, to be on the show today. We did not hear back from folks. So
Maybe if you're in the listening audience, you're more than welcome to call in and share your perspective. And folks, we were able to be on the ground last year at last year's Entrada in 2016. I had the chance to interview some of the people who played the key role. I had a chance to talk with Daniel Ray Diaz de Rodriguez, who played the role of Don Diego de Vargas. Here he is and what he had to say about this role.
So I portrayed the role of El Capitán General Don Diego de Vargas, and his role was the peaceful intercession with Our Lady that to commemorate two cultures.
And tell me about, I guess, when you first found out that you'd be playing this role and any thoughts about carrying this position.
Well, it all started back last year. I had the opportunity to be on the Cuadrilla, and I portrayed a soldado, and it was my faith through a hard time that I was going through in my life that kept me strong and believing that this role was something I wanted to do. So that's what ultimately gave me the decision to run for this role.
And definitely what the Entrada and what we just witnessed and what you just were a part of is talking about an intersection of cultures. Tell me what it means to be a part of that.
It's great because it shows our traditions, our cultures, and it shows how rich they are and how we've come from when all this started with the revolt, and that we're now united and that we live in peace with one another.
And what's your understanding of the importance of this story being retold in the way that it does each year?
The importance, just like any story, is the peace, and that we are in peace because we can live united, and that we go forward from here, that we don't stay looking in the past, because we know that there was things that shouldn't have happened, but we learn from our mistakes and we get better from that.
And again, that was Daniel Ray Diaz de Rodriguez, who played the role of Don Diego de Vargas in 2016. There is also an individual in the reenactment who represents a Pueblo person. We interviewed him too, had a chance to talk with Dominic Sherwood of Nambe Pueblo. He portrayed Cacique Domingo, who is the Tisuki Pueblo governor, who is noted as negotiating with de Vargas about the resettlement of Santa Fe. Here is Dominic now talking about his role.
I defended the honor of Cacique Domingo, Governador de Tisuque, and he is just a governor back in the day of Tisuque Pueblo.
And what's your understanding of the meaning of the Entrada and the Fiestas?
I don't think I have a comment on that. Sorry.
Okay, and being a part of this event, what does it mean to you?
It's awesome to me. I look forward to the future. I live for today and for tomorrow, and I'm not here for what happened yesterday. I'm focused on the future, and I just want to make tomorrow better than today.
And there was a part in the procession where there were a uniting of hands, even. Between the two sides in, and I don't know the proper way to call it, the reenactment, or if you have a better way to say it, there was definitely a moment where unity happened. Yes. Tell me why that's significant.
That's significant because all of New Mexico is multicultural everywhere. You go everywhere and there's several different cultures, not only Christian and Native American, but there's so many different, unique, beautiful cultures out here. And the coming together of all these cultures is just amazing, and it's something that we can't get anywhere else in the world but here. So I think when we come together like that in front of everybody, it pushes everybody to go out of their comfort zone in a sense, and explore new things and learn about new things and be open to these new things. I mean, If you're going to live in a box your entire life, I mean, go ahead, but I'm going to be out here and I'm going to learn about everything and try and talk to everybody and meet everybody and be everybody's friend.
And again, that was Dominic Sherwood of Nambe Pueblo, a part of the 2016 Entrada reenactment. And I'm going to turn to our guests, but folks, if there's anything that you just heard that you want to share thoughts on, you can give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. This is Native America Calling. We're live, and we look forward to adding your voice to the conversation. And Elaine, I'm going to turn to you because I do believe you were there in 2016 at the Entrada, and I think I recognize you from that. These two interviews took place after the procession of the Entrada. And much like this year, people who were opposed to this stood in protest against it. They're very vocal. And so these two individuals witness some of the pushback going on. And so, Elena, let's go to the words of what you just heard. Any reactions on the views of the people inside the reenactment and their thought about what this means? We heard words about portraying unity. We heard words of peace. Anything you want to share?
If this Entrada and this fiesta is about peace, then why do they celebrate it by dressing up as soldiers? Why do they celebrate reconquest? This is an anomaly that I don't understand. They talk about peace. They talk about our tradition, our traditions and our culture. And yet they're elevating a Eurocentric ideal, which does not exist in New Mexico anymore. So we have indigenous communities, we have old Spanish communities, we have Mexican and Central American people living in New Mexico. We are all blended together. But this Eurocentric ideal has no place in contemporary northern New Mexico anymore. This idea of conquest, this ideal man who is this Spanish soldier, they're holding on to archaic and damaging gender roles, as well as this idea of conquest being what has built our communities. And it isn't. It's what's torn apart our communities. The revisionist history is damaging in that it portrays a peaceful reconquest when we all know it wasn't. It takes place on the plaza where 70 Pueblo leaders were hung from the gallows. So tell me that's peaceful.
All right. Thank you for that, Elena. Again, if you want to join us, 1-800-996-2848. Demetrius, any thoughts?
The person who played the governor of Tsuki, one of the things he said is, you know, I'm trying to make tomorrow better than today. And he used this rhetoric of like, well, I don't look in the past. I always look forward. And to me, that's a privilege. You know, that's something that, you know, for us Native peoples, we can't really do. Especially, you know, when events like the Entrada happen and there's this revisionist history of like, oh, it was peaceful back then. Nothing bad happened. Everything, we just shook hands and we lived together on this land very, you know, harmoniously. That's not the case. And we know that's not the case. And so for them to shove that down our throats and for them to force us to celebrate this and make everyone believe like it was very peaceful that way. It's hard. It's hard to move on. It's hard to heal. It's hard to say it's okay when the knife's still in your back. You know, it's hard to move on from that. So that's something I don't really agree with, that type of thinking, that type of rhetoric.
And so that's you know, a snapshot of what happened last year. And I was away at the Native American Journalists Association conference, so wasn't able to be there on the ground to report on this, but the moment I started seeing coverage on this, you know, as far as California, it blew up on social media when the interaction heated up again this year. We heard from Jennifer Marley earlier this hour, who was arrested at the event. And so can you give us more of a snapshot of how it was? And Elena, I'm going to turn to you. Just seeing how it was last year, it definitely was heated. You could hear tension in the audience. Being a reporter, people were screaming at me, you know, and I was in an area where more reporters were, but people were directly screaming at me to move and get out of the way, and they weren't doing that to other reporters, so I think that's interesting. But take us to today and this year and a little bit of what happened.
So what happened this year during the Entrada protest, what epitomized to me 500 years of principled indigenous resistance. We had planned a peaceful, prayerful action to protest revisionist history and the celebration of the genocide of our cultures, the attempted genocide of our cultures. We had agreed to meet and go forward with good hearts and with peaceful intentions. And the Fiesta Council at the last minute changed the time of the Entrada because they were afraid of us. And they didn't want to deal with the truth being told and shown to them. So they moved the time up 2 hours. All of us gathered as quickly as we could to be herded into a free speech zone because the permit holder, which is the Fiesta Council, had determined that free speech was to be suspended on that particular day and only allowed in a small corner of the plaza. In other words, move us off the plaza. Things got heated at that point because some of us understand that our constitutional rights are not allowed to be suspended by a group of men dressing up as soldiers. So we protested that. That's when the first wave of our allies were arrested on the plaza, carried off for exercising their First Amendment rights. We tried to move around the plaza. We walked around the block to try to get onto the plaza that way, all the while being peaceful, chanting, singing, drumming. We got around the plaza and we tried to get through the police barricades. They moved the barricades with every step we took. They moved along. Jennifer Marley was in the lead and crossed through the police boundary and was thrown to the ground and arrested on the spot. She was targeted because she's a very vocal and visible leader of the movement. At that point, we were very, very upset. We turned around and came back and tried to get onto the plaza another way. The police at that point led us closer to the plaza, but they never let us out of the free speech zone, which is where we were secluded in the corner. They were taking pictures of us the whole way on the rooftop. There were men with sniper rifles. It was a very disturbing but not unexpected presence.
Sure. And I do want to say I don't have the information as to what the statement is from the group, from the Entrada, as to why they moved the time. But I've heard this speculation that they moved it because they wanted to avoid the protests. I don't have the information directly from them, and I'll give them that space. If anybody's listening and wants to clear that up, you can call in. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. But you're giving us your observations, Elena, and what you saw, what you experienced. And so when you hear or you think back on that day, and especially hearing that there was a designated free speech zone, that sounds very similar to what was taking place in North Dakota. With the Dakota Act, the stance against the Dakota Access Pipeline, that there was going to be a free speech zone. I think that's really big and something we should explore. And folks, if there's anything you'd like to say about that, give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. But Elena, when you look back at all of this, you see arrests were made. What is your thought on processing all of this, where your group, as well as others, wanted to be vocal about inaccuracies in history, how this makes you feel as a Pueblo person, and, you know, we're left with media reports of arrests, protesters. What is the big lesson you hope people understand about what happened?
That the colonization of Native America is ongoing. It has never stopped. That we are still under occupation. That Native voices are only allowed when they are describing their art, their writing, their ceremonies. But when we start to demand that our voices in political arenas and against the violation of our civil rights, against the colonization of our Mother Earth, against the colonization of our bodies, when we start to vocalize that, that it becomes unacceptable, and we are ushered into a free speech zone, or we are arrested, or we have police officers on the rooftops taking pictures of us. We have sniper rifles pointed at us. That is not an acceptable manner in which to express our indigeneity. And to me, that epitomizes also what has been done to us for the last 500 years.
All right, folks, anything you want to add? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Demetrius, I want to turn that to you. Free speech zone. You are a part of the Kiva Club. You understand a lot, and some of the things that have gone on the University of New Mexico campus has really made your group understand about the free speech and the ability to share your thoughts and express your opinions. And then you're in a college setting where a lot of that happens anyway. Demetrius, I'd like you to comment on a free speech zone being set up. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I just think it's I don't know. For the last time I remember, you know, we Kiva Club was kind of monitored for their free speech, and a lot of the students on campus was the Milo protest, and that one was pretty well documented. That one was probably just as violent as the Entrada protest. I mean, we didn't have snipers, but we had people in riot gear. We had cops on horses. That one was we had tear gas thrown at us. So that's, you know, this whole you know, free speech zone. The more I think about it, I don't think it's, you know, it's for free speech. It's just a place for cops to kind of just keep us penned up and to target us. It's not, you know, we can vocalize our voices, but they put us so far away from where anyone can hear us. It's kind of ridiculous. I don't understand why, you know, especially with the Entrada specifically, if it is a public space, why can't we use our First Amendment rights that were given to us? It gets more frustrating the more, you know, you get into this work, but, you know, you do what you can. But even with the Entrada, just being, you know, in that setting, having these sniper rifles pointing at you, it's very scary. It's very, I don't know, intimidating.
All right. Well, I do appreciate you sharing your perspective. Maybe we have some lawyers in the audience who would like to take a look at this. Maybe you are taking a look at what happened with this year's Entrada. Any thoughts for us? And of course, folks, if you are also there witnessing any side, any way you see this, you are welcome in this conversation. Phone lines are open. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We're going to pause here for a moment to let you know about what is coming up tomorrow on Native America Calling, but our phone lines will remain open. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We look forward to your calls. You can also reach out to us and send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And of course, you can always post on Facebook or directly on our website. We look forward to your thoughts in the conversation. I'm Tara Gatewood, host of Native America Calling. Indigenous Women Entrepreneurs of New Mexico opens the doors to the lives of a handful of women from different tribal nations and their pursuit of business. On our next program, we'll meet the business leaders behind this book. We hope you'll join us. We'll be right back.
Alaska Native and American Indian people are providers, teachers, and artists. They are many things, but they are not defined by tobacco. It's a fact. Over half of Alaska Native adults don't use tobacco. For more resources on building a healthy life, visit anthc.org/we are. This announcement is sponsored by ANTHC, a nonprofit organization, and by Intertribal H2O, offering Enagic water filters from Japan, which alkalize water in homes and offices. Information about their products and testimonials available at intertribalh2o.com. Support by the Sisseton, Wahpeton, Oyate Tribes, Dakota Western Corporation, and SWO Plastics. Commercial strength trash bags from 3 to 65 gallons for industrial use by casinos, the IHS, and more. DakotaWesternCorp.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, and thank you for joining us today. We're glad you can spend a little bit of your day with us. And if you're not able to participate during our live show, you can always add your opinion later on our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com, or on Facebook, or even on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And today we are talking about a reenactment that takes place in Santa Fe, New Mexico. It's an annual event called the Entrada de Don Diego de Vargas. It's a reenactment of the so-called resettlement of Santa Fe. This year, protesters clashed with police. They stood out, saying the reenactment is inaccurate, and we're hearing from some of them here today in our studio. And we also want to hear what you think about the Entrada, and maybe you're hearing about this the first time. Does it resemble something that goes on in your community? We know there are different reenactments that take place throughout the year that are a retelling of history, which include Native people, or maybe they're a retelling that exclude Native people. If there's anything you want to share, if you're relating to this, give us a call. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And we're going to go to our phone lines and say hello to Robert, who is tuned in today in Dulce, New Mexico, listening on KCIE. Robert, thank you for your call. You're on air.
Hello.
Hello, go ahead. You're on air.
Oh, yeah. My comment on this whole business is, why do they keep reenacting, you know, us being a conquered people under the Spaniards? You know, it's not like that anymore. And the thing that really gets me is they don't realize how many Pueblos lost their lives because of what they've done. Not only that, you know, it's just like, it's like asking the Jews to reenact what they went through. You know, that's just disrespectful all the way around.
All right, Robert, thank you for your call there in Dulce, New Mexico. We're going to take another call. We have Valerie in Santa Fe, New Mexico, listening on KUNM. Valerie, thank you for giving us a ring. Go ahead. You're on air.
Hello. Thank you for allowing me to speak today. I have a controversial opinion from what's being spoken about, and I'm somebody that does represent the piece behind what La Entrada represents, because I'm a native New Mexican. And I love where we come from. I don't agree with the genocide that's happened. I do not agree from any term, you know, or angle. But I do believe that that was part of the promise to the Spaniards. It's a different culture that's not really spoken about, because a lot of us have been so detached from our cultures and uprooted oftentimes for some of us that went through the foster care system. So we've had to learn a way of adapting and unifying our own selves to see what it truly means. And what it means to me is it was that moment of peace where La Conquistadora treaded with her soldiers who were not returning home to their countries because they were either being held prisoners or they were losing their lives. There's histories and generations that we need to really not act like they don't exist, because when I say that La Entrada is about peace, it's not about negating the fact that we are oppressed in our communities. Our rural, our frontier areas need a lot of attention. But we are not the enemy. We are the ones that are also upholding that same right. I believe everybody should have their freedom of speech. But at La Entrada, it's something that is intended to unify our cultures. It's not something that's intended to bring about, but it's something that I understand is going to go along with it. I myself feel that same way with my culture. And as I learn about my culture, I see that my roots run throughout, just past the United States, because I believe we are all connected by our waters. and our living waters. And I believe that this stop, that the fracking is really impacting us, no dapple. I think people are looking for healing and remedies, and we need to start defending ourselves and where we come from and what we truly belong to, because that's trying to be taken from us if we allow it. We do have our right to speak. We do have our freedom of speech, and that's because of, and that's what I believe La Entrada to represent. I'm somebody that believes firmly that it is about that intercessory prayer that was promised to not only the penitentes, but those in the mission churches that were able to successfully achieve peace.
All right. Valerie,
even if it is for them.
Valerie, I do appreciate your call. And I want to bring in our guests with us today in Studio 49. We have Elena Ortiz. She's an organizer for In the Spirit of Popey. She comes to us from Okeowinge Pueblo. Also with us here in Studio 49 is Demetrius Johnson. He's an organizer with the Red Nation and president of the Kiva Club at the University of New Mexico. And Elena, I want to give you a moment if there's anything you want to respond. Valerie is giving us a different perspective on this. She sees positive things, talking about unifying people who are here today. Any response?
So the first point about unification, if indeed this is about unification, then why are they celebrating conquest? Because those to me are anathema. They stand, unification and conquest are in opposition to each other. The second thing is talking about La Conquistadora, which is really the symbol of the Entrada, the statue of the Virgin Mary, and the promise made to her by Don Diego de Vargas. If Fiestas en La Entrada is about La Conquistadora, two things. The statue, the Virgin Mary, is a symbol of war, and I don't believe that's what the Catholic Church believes. And the second thing is, if it is a religious festival, it has no place in public space or in the public schools. It violates the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. It violates all of our civil rights. The use of public money to promote such a thing is a violation of the First Amendment. And if, as many acknowledge, it is a religious festival, get it out of our schools, get it out of our public space, take it and put it in a private theater, because that's what it is. It is not history. It is conquest theater.
All right. Thank you for that. Phone lines are open. Join us at 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Also want to bring in another voice. Also joining us from Santa Fe, New Mexico, is Rob Martinez. He is a deputy state historian for New Mexico. It's our pleasure to welcome him in. Rob, thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a very interesting conversation we're having here.
And we're glad, you know, it's happening. And I'm seeing these phone lines light up. I think other people want to share their thoughts, which is a really good thing, you know, dialogue when it comes to these kind of things. And so, Rob, as a deputy state historian, I imagine you're into history and putting together the story of the state. And so when it comes to the Entrada, what is being portrayed in the reenactment and then what you know to be true or the history of New Mexico, how do the two line up? And if you have any information on the beginnings of this Entrada and who wrote it, Rob, take us there.
Well, first of all, I agree with one of the guests when they said, we do have to look to the past. As a historian, I would have to say, yes, we have to look to the past. That's how we learn, right? We learn from our ancestors and we learn from their mistakes. So I think what we have to recognize is that New Mexico first belonged to the Pueblo people. They're here first, and they were on the receiving end of Spanish colonialism, Spanish conquest, and imperialism. And that's us Hispano people, that's where some of our ancestors came from. But we even have to rethink our own history and look back and say, well, when the revolt took place in 1680, those people that were ejected from New Mexico were already part Native American. They were three-generation people here. And so, yes, when you have that the conquest, with Vargas in 1692, there's that brief moment where there's some reconciliation, although somewhat uneasy. We have to remember there's all kinds of people moving around here. It wasn't just Pueblo people and Hispanic people. There were also Comanches and Apaches, and there were limited resources here, and everybody's vying for these access to water and land. So when Vargas returns in 1693 with colonists, as you can imagine, I suspect our Pueblo cousin said, whoa, you know, we don't know. I don't know if we agreed to this part of your entrada, you know, your reentrance here. So, yeah, it got violent, and the Spaniards were violent on the Pueblos, and Pueblo people were executed, and Spanish civilization was reimposed on the Pueblo people. Now, we know that from about 1712, there was the idea of commemorating La Conquistadora, whose original name was Nuestra Señora del Rosario, Our Lady of the Rosary. She was given the name La Conquistadora after the Reconquest. So there is that conquest aspect that she didn't ask to be named. You know, it's just imposed on her. And so that's part of that history as well. But if, what do we have when we say fiestas? That's already a loaded term these days. A fiesta is a feast day. It's already a religious idea, the feast of a patron saint. Whether you're in Italy, it's a festa. In Italy, in Spain, in Mexico, it's a fiesta. And in New Mexico, it's a fiesta. And probably through the 1700s, what you had was a fiesta every year with a religious procession through the town with the statue and with the people and the priests, the clergy, carrying her through the town, probably singing alabados, hymns, and then a celebration. And out of the gate, Santa Fe was Spanish and Native American. There weren't just Spanish people living here, and most of the people living here were mixed blood Spanish and Native American.
Wait,
so you have that
going all the way through. Hey, Rob, I'm going to jump in here. I'm curious. This information you're sharing, where does that come from? Was it documented? Where do we get our information or the information that you're sharing about what was so during this time period? Rob?
Well, we have Spanish documents that say that Vargas wanted to have a fiesta to commemorate the return of the Spanish. But it says nothing about wearing armor or having military gear or reenacting with a play. It says nothing about that. It probably looked like any fiesta you would see in any town or city in Latin America or Spain. We become Mexican in 1821, and it's important to recognize that because not only were the Native Americans not only did they have imperialism imposed on them by Spain, but by the United States as well in the 1800s, the mid-1800s, and so did the Hispanic people. So remember, by the mid-1800s, we're a territory of the United States, and we try to become a state. We had enough people, but we were viewed as, and not in my words, but you can find them in documents, as mixed-blood, fanatical Mexicans and savage Indians, and not worthy of statehood. So there's this move over the next 50 years, 60 years, to turn us into Spanish people. And this is part of the reason we see this imagery of armor, of helmets, of swords, because by the time the fiestas are established in the 1620s, as we see them now with zozobra and all these new elements, that's part of our Europeanizing of the population of New Mexico, okay? So that's where that comes from. My family's from northern New Mexico. We never heard anything about conquistadors or anything like this. This is a relatively recent invention, and it's a very romantic one. I've seen the video, and I've witnessed the entrada many times, and it's very romantic. It shows the conquistadors coming, which, frankly, most of our ancestors didn't even dress like that, okay? But they came in, and the Pueblo representative is wearing a headdress that isn't even culturally accurate. And the dialogue is very much 1920s. I think it's been tweaked a little in the 1960s. But there's a whole history to the history, and I hope I make my point.
There's a lot there. I think you opened up quite a bit for us, Rob. I do appreciate you being on the line with us. Maybe you have a question directly for Rob. You can call in 1-800-996-2848. We're going to go to our phone lines to say hello to Diego, who is in Bernalillo, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Diego, thank you for your call. You're on air.
Go to the Opa. I just want to add to the conversation. Before the protests on the plaza, there were protests on the website. You can go to Indian Country. Pueblo's protest on anniversary of 1680 revolt. This was when Governor Richardson was at the Rotunda. It's pretty well documented on the genocide. Also, another protest was the Albuquerque Tricentennial, and it's also in the Indian Country today. But those protests were drawing attention to the genocide, the in Toronto, the entrance, the monument in Old Town, the monument in El Paso, Texas, the largest equestrian bronze monument to Don Juan de Oñate. They had to tone down the controversy, but there were Pueblo protests from the Pueblo of Acoma that drew a lot of attention at that time frame.
And so what I'm getting from this, Diego, is people are being vocal. They're talking about different things and these kind of celebrations. And I think, you know, we are in a special time, or either we're in a time where we're covering this kind of stuff. Folks, how do you think it changes things when we do start talking about this out in the open? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Diego, I got a lot of calls I'm trying to squeeze in before the hour's over. I'm going to take another one now. We're going to an anonymous caller in New Mexico. Caller, you're on air.
Hi, I just wanted to make a quick comment. We are protesting the Entrada or whatever it was, the reenactment. But yeah, we don't have to go very far, and I think some of us are very selective. For our Pueblo, the Pueblo feast days, they all begin with the Spanish Mass. They all session, and we don't have any testing against us. And we see it a very spiritual event.
All right, I'm sorry I lost you, Alina. I don't know if he was getting to the point of Pueblos celebrate non-Pueblo things from the beginning before conquest. I think that's where he was going with it. We often hear that. And during this year's Entrada, I think a lot of different posts. One of the news organizations posted a video, and the comments afterwards got pretty heated, back and forth. Some of them got nasty. And there was that argument, too. Why do Pueblos have, they have incorporated Spanish things? And so I think that's maybe where our caller was going. I'm sure you hear this often when people push back, and we even hear, well, Pueblos have Spanish surnames. Anything you want to share about that kind of pushback?
The fact that we have Spanish surnames is because we were forced to take them when we were forcefully baptized by the Franciscan missionaries. They were not our choice. The inclusion of Catholicism into many Native communities was part of history, and no one is denying that there are many communities that, 90% of the people are Catholic and also practice traditional Pueblo spiritual beliefs. They are not mutually exclusive, but we don't celebrate the conquest. That's the component that people miss, is that this is a brutal and violent act that is being celebrated. No one is denying that many of us have Spanish, Mexican, many different different DNA running through us. We don't want to celebrate conquest. We don't want to celebrate the attempted genocide of our people. That is the component that people don't understand, that this continued colonization and this continued occupation is not acceptable. And it needs to be acknowledged before we can move on. We need that acknowledged. We're not asking people to apologize for the transgressions of their ancestors. We're asking them to help us dismantle the systems they created and that they benefit from.
All right. And Elena, earlier we mentioned that, and we heard it from Jennifer Marley at the top of the hour, some of the interview that we had with her, which, by the way, I do believe we're going to put on our website if you'd like to hear more about that. Elena, this is also in the schools, and your daughter opted to not view this, as I understand, and that was something, an option that was given from administrations across the school district. If youth felt that they did not want to witness the DeVargas character coming to their school, they could opt out. Some people have pushed back against that, saying that's creating division in our school. Is there anything you can tell us about the lessons learned or any of your thoughts on that when this is also now moving into our school districts and we're getting close on time? So go ahead.
The divisions created were created by the city of Santa Fe in allowing a celebration of conquest to be taught to our children. And until we recognize indigenous history and allow indigenous history to be taught as an equal partner in the curriculum, then the division is going to exist. Don Diego De Vargas and his court visit all of the public schools in Santa Fe. The indigenous students and anyone who feels that they don't want to participate can opt out of it. This was the first year that happened, and it is due in a lot of cases to the work of the Red Nation and other indigenous activists who have lobbied the schools to allow students to opt out of that. This is the first year that that's been allowed. So up until now, that transgenerational trauma has been visited upon our children and our students for decades. And that is wrong. It always was wrong, and it should have ended a long time ago.
All right. And so, you know, I can't help but wonder anytime we cover this or you see, okay, what happens after? You see some of the comments about the division that has happened in the city itself. What happens the day after the entrada, the week after the entrada? How do people move forward? Demetrius, I'm going to give you that big question. Go ahead. Any thoughts?
Oh, my gosh. Could you ask the question again?
Sure. Just moving forward after all of this. How do we do it as a nation, outside viewers, people in the city, the community of New Mexico? Any thoughts? And time is ticking.
I know, I'm sorry. Wow, that is a big question, but I think, you know, one of the things that at least I was taught is to be open to everyone's viewpoints, to understand where people are coming from and try to make your, you know, decision on that. Be listening with an open heart. And once you can do that first step, and then I don't know, maybe you can make your own decision from that, but I just feel like a lot of people just, you know, go into this, they automatically think, you know, there's two sides. And when they start, you know, becoming divisive like that, then it just starts becoming hard to convince people, because then it's just like, oh, is this a conversation about, you know, political correctness? Is this, you know, liberal versus conservative? Is, like, they start, you know, putting these labels on things. And once you start doing that, it's just like, okay, well, are you even listening to what's being taught at hand? Are you listening to these conversations? And once you get rid of that type of, you know, divisive thinking and just think, you know, well, these indigenous peoples here are trying to make their voices heard. That's the first thing. Second thing, what are they saying? They're talking about this entrada. They're talking about this revisionist history. They're talking about this violent history that was forced upon them, and the city of Santa Fe is actually, you know, promoting this event and teaching as correct history. They're forcing our kids to go to field trips and and listen and observe this history. And for us people, for the older people who are trying to, you know, change it, we're having snipers pointing at us. We're being attacked, we're being arrested. And so for all these things, and for, you know, just listen, just observe, just come in this with an open heart. I think that's the first step we can do to create this change.
All right. And anybody wants to follow up, Red Nation has been following this for years. Any context you want to share? Just find Red Nation on Facebook?
Yes. Okay. So, yeah, Red Nation has a website, therednation.org. And we also have a Facebook page, The Red Nation.
Sounds good. And Elena, if anybody wants to follow up in the Spirit of Pope, where do they reach you?
We have a Facebook page, The Spirit of Pope.
All right, folks, that's going to wrap it up for our conversation today. There's a lot there. I'm sure you have more to say. Feel free to reach out to us. You can always send us an email, comments@nativeamericacalling.com. You can also post directly on our website, and we're on Facebook, and our Twitter handle is at 1-800-99-NATIVE. If you'd also like to share thoughts there. And if you're finding this in our rebroadcast, we appreciate you for finding your way to this audio, and look forward to seeing your comments on some of this too. Folks, if you didn't know, a rebroadcast of our program happens on Native Voice One in the evening. You can check listings at nv1.org. And thanks again to everybody we heard from in the hour, Demetrius Johnson, Elena Ortiz, and Rob Martinez. Also thanks to Jennifer Marley for adding her thoughts, as well as the folks from the Entrada who also gave us an interview, Daniel Ray Diaz de Rodriguez and Dominic Sherwood of Nambe Pueblo. That's going to wrap it up for our show today. Tomorrow we are back with our Book of the Month show, talking about Native women entrepreneurs. Thanks to our crew here at Native America Calling, Art Hughes, Monica Brain, Andy Murphy, and Marino Spencer. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor and producer of National Native News. I'm your host and producer, Tara Gatewood. Thanks again, and we look forward to having you back in our electronic talking circle tomorrow and beyond.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians, working to empower K-12 schools to strengthen health and safety policies through the School Health Index self-assessment. Schools with 50% or more American Indian or Alaska Native student enrollment are eligible to participate and receive funding. Information available by emailing Jamie McDaniel at jmcdaniel@aaip.org. Support for this program by the Association of American Indian Physicians, advising us all to protect the circle of life. Help prevent the spread of the flu by getting a flu vaccine each year at your local healthcare facility, a mobile or community immunization clinic, or a pharmacy or grocery in your area. For more information, ask your aaip.org. Thank you for keeping Indian Country healthy.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.